What's good, everyone? My name is Jacob Moses, community builder at Strongtowns, and welcome to It's the Little Things, a Strongtowns podcast where in each episode, we focus on a different action that you, the concerned citizen, the elected official, the city planner, can take to make your town stronger. This episode's action? Providing healthy food in urban neighborhoods. Think about the last time you explored an urban neighborhood. These are the neighborhoods in the downtown cores of our cities where we see that beautiful mix of business and residents. While these neighborhoods generally provide many of the day's needs to its residents, they're often lacking in healthy food options. We're seeing it in our trendy neighborhoods where the focus has shifted to restaurants and bars. And more important, we're seeing it in our low-income neighborhoods where the only food option is likely a junk food-ridden corner store. My guest in this episode, Brianna Hawkins, policy director at the Los Angeles Food Policy Council, understands the negative effect these food deserts have on its populations, especially in Los Angeles. And along with her colleagues, she's pioneered several programs, from corner store interventions to educational materials, to help provide healthy food in its urban neighborhoods. Brianna's insights, no matter where you live, whether in a major metropolitan area like Los Angeles, or a small urban core like my neighborhood of downtown Denton, will give you the insights you need, no matter your role in your city, to start providing healthy food in your neighborhood. Enjoy. Hey there, Brianna. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm doing well. How are you, Jacob?
Doing good, doing good. How's life in Los Angeles?
You know, it's not too bad. It's about 75 degrees outside. It's feeling pretty good. How about you?
Things are good. Things are good. Just kicking it here in Denton.
Nice.
Well, Brianna, I'm just overjoyed to be chatting with you today. We have a great action to cover together, and that is providing healthy food in our neighborhoods. And Brianna, you know just as well as me that this is a very relevant and timely conversation for a couple of reasons. I mean, many of our existing populations in neighborhoods, in urban neighborhoods in particular, don't have access to healthy food. You know, as consumers, we're prone to go with what's most convenient. And sadly, for many of these urban neighborhoods, it's the Burger Kings and the McDonald's. And then secondly, we take a look at the shift of where people want to live, and people seem to be demanding more of these mixed-use, walkable neighborhoods, which the big box retailer really can't meet from my perspective. So, Brianna, I'd love to start off this podcast by discussing the Los Angeles Food Policy Council. What was the food landscape that motivated former Mayor Antonio Villarezio to start the LA Food Council 7 years ago?
Los Angeles is a city that's like many other cities throughout the country. We have a huge diversity of people that live there, some with high incomes, some with lower incomes, but all striving towards trying to just create a good quality of life for themselves and their families. The things that about Los Angeles that are a little bit unique are that LA actually used to be the hub, the agricultural hub of the state early on in its establishment. But through zoning, through urbanization, through various policies, agricultural activities were actually prohibited from taking place within the city, much of the city limits. And then we started to have the reverse effect, whereas infill development started to occur, we actually saw that there were fewer opportunities for people to access freshly grown local food. I mean, today, LA still sits at the hub, the heart of the largest food producing region in the world, really, with the Central Valley, just a few miles north. But there's 40% of low-income Angelenos struggle to find where their next meal is going to come from. So this sort of dichotomy of our history and our present, about the abundance of where our region is, but also about the immense need of our residents, really reflected some of these areas of opportunity and also challenges that our food system faces. So it was actually a couple of academics, some food justice advocates, some food security folks who just all banded together and were interested in creating a task force with Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa to explore these issues a little bit more, to figure out how can we really take advantage of the resources that are available in the Los Angeles area to address these needs. That's how the Food Policy Task Force started, and ultimately the Food Policy Council was born out of that.
And Brianna, I appreciate you talking the history of how we get access to food, because you're exactly right. I mean, long before the supermarket, it was just everyday people growing their own food. And then we introduced the neighborhood grocer. It was the core of the neighborhood. It was the focal point of where we got the day's needs. And then city intervention came in and Walmart came in, and it became gradually more difficult to get the day's needs, including healthy food, in the neighborhood. A big result of this, Brianna, is food deserts. So Brianna, from your experience as the policy director at the LA Food Policy Council, what effects are food deserts having on urban neighborhoods in LA that we're likely seeing across the country as well?
Food deserts are really big issues in the city of LA. Pockets of the city where there just are not a lot of grocery stores or other places where people can access healthy food options. And sometimes people call them food swamps because there's also an inundation of some of the unhealthy establishments that you were talking about, Jacob, like the fast food restaurants or liquor stores. But then other folks, they call these conditions food apartheid, because recognizing that there were some policies and really intentional programs that sort of created the inequities that we see today in people's ability to access food. I often tell the story about my grandfather, who came to Los Angeles from Selma, Alabama in the South. And he came as a 19-year-old with nothing but a high school diploma and $300 in his shoes. And he actually got his first job at a grocery store. And he was working in the back of the store, worked his way up to the front of the store, ended up becoming the first Black manager that the store a chain ever had, and then ultimately decided that he wanted to serve his community better and his family better by becoming an entrepreneur. So he became a corner store owner, and he had two corner stores in South Los Angeles. And he worked really hard to be able to offer healthy food options. But he said it was really difficult just because, you know, the turnover, the stores are smaller, having the equipment to be able to support those healthy food options. But the most remarkable thing that he said was, you know, he came here in the late 50s. And since then, he's seen that there are fewer grocery stores in South LA today than there were back then, despite the fact that the population has increased significantly since then. And a lot of that has to do with, like you were saying, the development patterns. As the city becomes more dense, it's more difficult for the typical 30,000 square foot grocery store to be able to develop in an area where you don't have 30,000 square feet to develop. Or because of policies that sort of led to the divestment of in inner cities in the past, or redlining policies that limited financial investments in areas where people of color lived, all of these have contributed and accumulated to the conditions that we see today. And so what we've seen is that food deserts not only impact people's ability to access food, but also their health outcomes, because of what you eat translates to how you live. And South LA has some of the highest rates of nutrition-related chronic disease and obesity, but even more so, and the connection I was trying to make with this, you know, food apartheid terminology is that it's about our systems and the economic opportunity. And the thing about our food system is that, at least in LA County, 1 in 6 jobs are actually within the food system. They touch the food system in some way. And so through this divestment, through the lack of opportunity to be able to have food establishments in these communities, it's also a limited opportunity for jobs, for job development, for job growth. And so we see food access and addressing the food desert issue as a way of also addressing economic empowerment for communities that really need it most, like South LA and East LA, where they're not only suffering from lack of access to healthy food, but also lack of access to jobs and other things that support really quality of life.
Not only boosting economic development, but I'm also thinking about perhaps healthcare as well, Brianna. Oftentimes, we don't know we're sick until, like, were rushed to the hospital. The corner store, I think, can play an integral role in providing that healthy food on a daily basis. And because it's in more of a smaller setting and we rely it more on day to day, you get to see the same 2 or 3 faces every couple of days and have people checking up on you. Brianna, this is a great shift into the value of the corner store and kind of its future in regards to combating food deserts. I owned a corner store before joining Strong Towns, and it was difficult to get people to understand that, hey, like, you can buy an apple here. Like, I know it's not among 50 other variations, but like, it's still an opportunity to get some great nourishment. Where do you think corner stores fit in this future of combating food deserts in our neighborhoods?
Going back to my grandfather, when he had those two stores, he was able to hire locally. You know, he was able to know the faces of the people in the community as well. And he lived in the community. So he was invested not only in just maximizing his bottom line, but really also about maximizing community benefit. And that's why he was really adamant about providing healthy options in his store, because he knew that's what the neighborhood needed. And so I think the relationship building is there. We have a Healthy Neighborhood Market Network program where we actually work with small corner store owners to build their capacity to offer healthy options in communities that need it most in Los Angeles. And through the program, we've been able to create really catalytic transformations with stores that were previously only liquor stores, only selling alcohol and maybe soda. And now they're offering a full display of fruits and vegetables and healthy salads and kombucha and all these other items in, you know, neighborhoods that maybe never even seen kombucha before. So you're right to think that there is a shift that, you know, sometimes needs to take place. But one of our store owners, her name is Kelly Jackson. She has a store in a neighborhood called Hyde Park. And she actually comes from a public art background. So she was trained, got her master's degree in public art, and decided to take over her dad's store at a time when it was really struggling. And so when she transformed her store, she was adamant about not only making it a space where people can go get snacks and food, but really healthy food, but also a community gathering space, especially in a place like South LA where there aren't that many safe spaces for people to just build community. And so she holds art workshops, she holds visioning workshops, she has kids come and do art displays there inside of her store. It's been immensely successful in allowing the community to see her store in a different light. So I think that's what store owners can offer communities that a regular grocery store just, you know, may not be able to offer. And that is, as a part of the community, you can address so many other needs than just the food needs. We're talking about gathering space, community investment, public art. And we see that through the corner stores and the networks that we work with.
Oh my goodness. What innovation. What's that corner store called? Hyde Market?
It's actually called Hank's Mini Market. And Hank is her
Hank's
dad.
Hank's Mini Market.
Yes.
Okay. I'll have to look into that. That's amazing. We have a corner store here in Denton that, I kid you not, hosts like death metal punk shows every Friday night. So they'll move over the chip rack, and kids will set up their drum kits and bass guitars. And every year we do like a Denton Music and Arts Award show.
Oh, nice.
And year after year, they've won best anti-venue. Just like,
that's amazing.
That's a great point, Brandon. It's like, the corner store can mean so much more than a place to get the day's needs. And I think about the National Health Institute did a study, I think in 2017, about the positive perceptions that people have of a corner store. And I think one of the items was the store's willingness to sell culturally appropriate items.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the items. But what does the city need?
Mm-hmm.
How can we foster this culture? And a gathering place for art, I mean, that's remarkable, Brianna. So if someone's listening to this podcast and they have their go-to corner store, Brianna, right now, it's just a place where they get their six packs and their single cans of Dr. Pepper, but they can envision it being a place where they can get their healthy food. Can I or a listener do anything to encourage this business owner to start carrying healthy food? Is there a right approach? Is there a right shared language to build rapport, to be able to get more healthy items?
Yes, there is. I think, you know, at the end of the day, again, store owners, they are a part of the community and embedded in the neighborhood, and they are interested in servicing the community's needs. So I think to the degree that you can go into the store and say, hey, you know, it would be great if you had some apples here, maybe even some bananas here, as a start, I think in having more and more people in your neighborhood make those requests, they're going to pay attention to that. And unfortunately, stocking healthy food in a corner store, as you know, is just not as easy as bringing apples and banana. There does need to be additional resources put into it in order to make it successful, like merchandising and marketing. And so I would also connect with organizations who are interested in supporting small local businesses in a particular way. Actually, through our Healthy Neighborhood Market Network, we've found some unusual allies in the business space. We've had architects come and offer pro bono support to our corner stores to be able to help redesign their stores just because they want to bring social benefit. We've had other big, large grocery chains actually do trainings for these small store owners on how to merchandise and market their products in a way that can make them competitive. And so sometimes it's just about leveraging the relationships that you have in your network and trying to connect the store owners with people that can help them to build their capacity to better serve the neighborhood's needs. And then I guess one of the other things I'll say is that there's power in numbers. And so when one of the stories that we had in our network to get them on board, we had youth come, and they actually, at a school nearby, they surveyed all of the residents in the surrounding area, not all of them, but a good portion of them, to see what would they like to see offered in the corner store if they could offer healthier food options. And they collected over 100 surveys from just local residents around the store. And they offered that data to the store owner to say, look, there is demand for healthy food in the neighborhood. And these are the types of things that people want to see and what they would purchase if they were offered. And that was really helpful in motivating the store owner to be like, you know what, I am going to make this shift. Continue to express that need. And then, sorry, the last thing is support the store. I think it's great if they offer those things and you ask them to bring an apple and you go one time and buy the apple, then that's it. That's not going to lead to lasting change. We want to see these changes last over time. So that means continually support the store. I try to find ways to go to Hank's Mini Market, sometimes when I don't even need to, just to let her know that we are here for you. And I think that that's like some of the most reassuring things you can do to let a store owner know that what they're doing is great and in alignment with the overall bigger picture.
So we know what the concerned citizen can do. Brianna, what can the city do if they're noticing that their district or their ward is a food desert? Do all of our major cities need to start their own food policy councils, like what LA is doing, or are there lower, more incremental lifts to start combating food deserts? What can our city leaders do?
You know what? There's no silver bullet to addressing the issues of food inequity. Every city has its own unique challenges that have contributed to the factors of why not everyone has access to healthy food. And also, I think to your point about cultural relevance, that's something that needs to be tailored to those unique dynamics as well. But what I can say is that food policy councils, what they do is that they offer the opportunity to create a tailored solution. You're looking at what are the resources in your neighborhood. Are there professors that do agricultural science, but also nutrition, that might be interested in putting their research together to think about community level strategies that can be employed to address some of the issues seen in your neighborhood? That's something that food policy councils can help to cultivate. And they're all about breaking silos, going across sectors, and bringing everyone together for the same common purpose of ensuring that good food is accessible to everyone. So I would encourage other places to create food policy councils as a part of the strategy. And then I think, you know, the other part of the strategy is voting with your dollars, using the money that you do have to support businesses that are in alignment with your values. I think every time that we go out and we purchase food, we are telling the industry, we are telling policymakers, we are telling businesses what we value. And so to the degree that we can go to that local market or support that smaller farm or support that local business, that can definitely signal to the market that, hey, we value healthy, local, sustainable food, and those things will end up coming into the neighborhood.
Listeners, I think the moment that you start to pay more attention to your corner store, you'll be so pleasantly surprised about its offerings in regards to meeting your daily needs. I know many of us are used to, oh, I'm out of toilet paper. I have to drive a mile down to Kroger. I have to go down to Walmart. in reality, your corner store, like across the street, has like single roll toilet paper, and they have Tide, and they have water bottles, like things you maybe are used to driving to the full service grocery for. It's in your neighborhood. So encourage everyone, just take a moment just to pop in, say what's up, see what they have, start to build that rapport with the business store owner. It's going to be huge. So Brianna, someone's listening to this podcast. They're inspired. They want to start doing what they can to combating food deserts where they live. What's something that they can do tomorrow to start making it happen? How can they be a leader in their city to providing more healthy food in their neighborhood?
We've talked a lot about corner stores and retail options as a way to access healthy food, but we actually started this conversation off talking about agriculture and growing food. And that's one thing that anyone can do with some seeds, a little bit of soil and some water. You can begin to grow food too, as a way of reconnecting yourself to where food comes from. No, food does not come from a takeout box. It comes from the earth. And I think reestablishing that connection can help us to value food a little bit more differently, and also help us to change our palates and thinking about, wow, what is real food and what is not real food? So I would encourage anyone, if you're motivated to do something right away, grow something. One of our partners says growing food is like growing your own money. And so whether you have a big yard or a pot or an indoor plant, you can grow something today. And I think that's a great start.
And then you can be the provider of seasonal produce for your neighborhood corner store.
Definitely, definitely. Let's make that connection. We'd love to see more of that local sourcing.
I love it. I love it. Well, Brianna, thank you so much for chatting with me. To wrap up the podcast, and this is the question we end every episode with, how does providing healthy food in our neighborhoods make our town stronger?
Towns are as strong as, you know, the smallest element. When we think about who's in our neighborhood and the people who work tirelessly to be able to offer things to communities that maybe they can't get elsewhere, I think about some of the corner store owners that we've encountered. And so supporting corner store owners is a way to make town strong, because you're investing in your neighborhood instead of investing in solutions outside of the neighborhood. You're investing in the little guy who is your neighbor. And I think that brings so much more value than taking your dollars elsewhere.
And there's no better feeling than walking into your corner store and the cashier saying, "Hey, Jacob. Hi, Brianna." I mean, that's the good stuff.
Oh, yes, definitely.
That's the good stuff.
Yeah, it's about relationships. That's what makes towns great as well.
Well, Brianna, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. If people want to learn more about you, the work you're doing, all the great stuff that the LA Food Policy Council is doing with corner stores, where can people find more about y'all online?
Well, you can visit our website at www.goodfoodla.org. And you can also feel free to shoot me an email or call me. My contact information is on the website. We field calls from folks all over the country pretty regularly and try to offer as much support as possible. So don't hesitate to reach out.
Awesome. Well, Brianna, thank you so much again, and we'll chat very soon.
Great. Thank you, Jacob.
Bye, Brianna.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. If you're enjoying the content, please subscribe to It's the Little Things on iTunes, and we will chat next week. See ya.